Programming is supported by Topline Construction Firm, your local women-owned roofing contractor based out of Shoreview, Minnesota. Roof replacement, both retail and insurance work. More information at toplineconstructionfirm.com.
You're listening to a recording of a live radio show on NPR News. If you want to listen to us in real time, you can stream our show live weekdays at 9 and 11 a.m. Central. Thanks for listening and enjoy the show.
A few years ago, there was a survey done amongst women in Silicon Valley. 88% reported that they had experienced clients or colleagues address questions to male peers that should have been addressed to them. 69% experienced sexual harassment. 84% had been told they were too aggressive. And that's not to mention that men simply outnumber women in tech jobs. So Amazon, Facebook, and others in tech have spent hundreds of millions attempting to attract more women to the tech industry. So how's it going? And why is it important to have women leading technology products, building apps and algorithms? I've got two great guests. Jennifer Epperson is a user experience designer by day and editor of Blacks in Technology by Night. Welcome, Jennifer.
Hello.
And Kristen Womack is founder of Hack the Gap. Hi, Kristen.
Hello.
Thank you both for being here. I also want to hear from you listeners. Are you a woman who works in the tech industry? I'd like to hear about your experience. 651-227-6000 or 1-800-242-2828. Or if you have a question or comment about how design in tech could work better for women, I'd love to hear about that too. Again, 651-227-6000 or 1-800-242-2828. Jennifer, so because Kristen is here with me, I wanted to make sure you felt welcome, so I'm going to start with you. We usually talk about getting women interested as a pipeline and talk about it being a pipeline problem. Do you think that is it a pipeline problem that we've got?
I think that's definitely one of the issues. I think the interesting thing about tech as it's related to my experience is that I actually started out as a civil engineer. So in a totally different space, but still within the realm of the STEM community. And I think there's a lot to be said for kind of baking that interest in math and science, as well as technology, from a very early age, so that it isn't a matter of kind of, you know, equipping a 9-year-old girl with, you know, you're going to go out and basically change the world on behalf of all the other women in your class, but it's just more of an organic, hey, here's something that is also cool in addition to the things that you might be more traditionally interested in terms of the societal expectations that we've placed for women. So I think pipeline issue is definitely something, but I think more, I guess, youthful discussions that I've been a part of are really talking about how can we get girls interested in STEM fields, and then, you know, as they continue to grow and develop, then they are able to go into the workforce and, you know, add diversity to the gender pool, if you will.
Kristen, I just said you were founder of Hack the Gap, but I did not explain what Hack the Gap is. Why don't you explain it? And then I think that you're a great believer in getting girls interested in STEM, yes?
Oh, absolutely. Hack the Gap is an all-women hackathon where we bring women together to build projects in an all-women space. And I started it 5 years ago with another woman named Jenna Pedersen. And we set out to prove that the pipeline is not the only part of that. It's a multifaceted issue, and the pipeline is not to blame solely.
Okay, so that's what Hack the Gap is. But let's talk about the pipeline. I know it's not solely, but how do you think we are at getting girls interested in STEM? Are they interested in that it fades out, or are we're not good at that first push?
Well, I think the same number of women or young girls are interested in STEM as the boys are interested in STEM. But what happens is that from a very early age, girls are sort of not in the same they're not socially conditioned the same way as boys are. Boys, we tell them, oh, take a risk, go for that, do that. We give them a lot of confidence, and we infuse that in women or girls. And with girls, we often talk to them about the way they look, their name, their dress. And so that we start talking about things about them and not about their abilities. And that's when I think skirting away from STEM happens.
Jennifer, does that sound true to you?
Oh, absolutely. And it just brings up so many memories of growing up and kind of seeing a contrast between how I was raised versus how a lot of my peers are raised. Like, I was raised very much so in a way of, like, I was encouraged to take apart our electronics and put them back together and, you know, go outside and get rough and tumble. And actually, my mom made a very kind of deliberate decision to reinforce that some of the things that that you're speaking of, that looks and those sorts of things that some of my other peers were really getting, that, you know, you need to be pretty and you need to be this and you need to be that. My mom and my dad as well really went out of their way to kind of create a counter narrative for me growing up. And it actually wasn't until I, you know, became much older that I saw that that wasn't the norm. But absolutely, I think a lot of, and it sounds so simple, right? It sounds like, oh, it's just a simple tweak in messaging. But I think it's, to Kristen's point, it's a lot deeper than that.
Why isn't it just a tweak in messaging? And can do you think that a single family, or, well, in your case, it really did was a single family, Jennifer, a single family can make a difference, or a school, or does it need to be bigger than that, Kristen?
I think it needs to be bigger than that. Language shapes our culture, and culture influences our language. And we need to be working as hard with little boys about similar messaging, that it is okay for them to be other things than technical. So the sole focus on young girls is nice, and it is really impactful when you have a family that pushes you outside of your box and lets you take apart things and infuses confidence. But on the macro level, that's not going to help that young girl that gets into her first computer science class in college, and she looks around and there's no other women, or maybe two or three.
We have a call from Kathy in Minneapolis, and I think this is great because not that I have anything against little girls. I got a little girl, and she's wonderful. But I'd like to start talking about what experiences are like for women, actually, in tech. So our phone number here is 1-800-242-2828 or 651-227-6000. And Kathy called in right away. Hi, Kathy. What's your experience?
Hi. About 10 years ago, I went and got a degree in computer network administration. And I agree that our expert is right, that starting as little girls, you have to condition girls that, yes, this is a field they could go into. But for me, once I had chosen this field, I discovered that in class, when the teacher assigned us to work in groups of three, I, by the way, was the only female in my degree, I would get in the group of three, and the boys would elbow me out of the way and take over the computer and just do the thing. I mean, the two guys would elbow each other out of the way, too, and just do the assignment. Wouldn't let me get in on the so-called collaboration. And it's a generalization, but when I work with females, we collaborate with each other. We consult each other. Do you think we should do this? Yes, let's do it this way. But male culture, my generalization, men don't collaborate. They just take over. And any female wanting to go to school or get a career has to learn how to be forceful in order to hold her own with these really takeover kind of male classmates and coworkers.
Jennifer, does that sound familiar to you? Did you run into some elbows?
It's interesting. So in school, in civil engineering school, I actually didn't. And I don't know what, I don't know if it was just a matter of the time or the location or what, but I actually had just a fantastic time with my male classmates. And we had a ton of lab classes to take that, you know, required a lot of collaboration. But, and I will say the same thing through the years that I was a civil engineer out of school. The moment that I got to tech, however, that is when I started to see a lot more of these stereotypes, because I think they are still stereotypes. There are plenty of male colleagues that I've worked with over the years that have been fantastic and have, you know, shown me really great ways to finesse my collaboration skills. But yes, to the caller's point, generally speaking, I have definitely run into a lot of friction when it comes to collaboration, when it comes to making sure that my voice is heard within, you know, the scope of product definition, or just simply talking about, you know, what we're going to do for the day as a team. And you can tell I have few issues articulating or you know, projecting, but even still, it has definitely been a challenge.
Kristen, what is it about the tech world where, you know, where Jennifer says it was different from the civil engineering world, where, I mean, that's a math world, is a science world, and yet there's something about the tech world where there are a lot of elbows.
Mm-hmm. Well, in civil engineering, I don't know a lot about it, but it, from what I do know, it seems like a more disciplined practice and
disciplined, objective, and has like a licensing structure.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Right. And tech, you know, you have VC money and you have men pitching to other men. And when you listen to some of these pitches on podcasts and such, I'm a really big fan of Chris Sacca, but I was listening to a pitch he was doing, and he was using language that was so unfamiliar to what I would like to hear. Like saying, oh, yeah, us guys, we're... You know, I got this group of guys. I need $1 million. I'm going to put together a group of four guys, and you know, even talked about, I don't know, I don't want to repeat some of the things, but it was on the startup podcast and he said, you know, we got a bunch of these jerk off podcasts, and I was like, oh my God, like I don't talk like that. I don't want to hear that. Also, and so when women go to talk to venture capitalists about money, there's a direct mismatch because it's not as casual. Women are very polished when they're asking for money, because they are representing, I think a lot of women do feel like they're representing a lot of other women because they tend to be the only woman in the room. And it's just not as casual. And so when you listen to some of these pitches by men versus women, it's a lot more confidence from the men that are, and really fluid and loose. But to go back to the root of the issue, I think that it's not just women that are missing out. I think men are missing out too.
Mm-hmm.
I think women and men both have things to share. In terms of collaboration and the elbow pushing. And so I don't think it's just women to gain from this.
Mm-hmm. You're listening to Minnesota Public Radio News. I'm Stephanie Curtis, sitting in for Carrie Miller. We're talking about women in tech, and we want to hear about your experiences working in tech, as well as your ideas for making workplaces more inclusive. Give us a call, 1-800-242-2828, or call 651-227-6000. And I'd also love to hear about your experiences using technology that you felt like there's something that didn't work quite as well because you were a woman, or especially a woman of color, where it didn't connect with you and you feel like it could have gotten better design if a woman had been involved. 1-800-242-2828 or 651-227-6000. Kristen, how did you get into programming?
Well, it's interesting. So I was originally, before I went to college, I actually had a job working in an insurance office, and I became the tech person doing everyone's software installs and helped them build a database for marketing to clients. And then I went to school for sign language interpreting, and I studied linguistics of sign language and like the cultural interpretation between deaf and hearing cultures. And then I went to school for communications, the broadest degree I could find. And then I found myself right back into technology when I started at Best Buy and Best Buy Mobile, and working on software development as a larger team, which I had not had that previous experience with the team before. And then it just kind of went from there. And everything I've done has been either taught to me by other teams or self-taught or just working with others.
That is so, it's so, you've taken such a circuitous path to get there. Has that been helpful to you as a woman, or do you think that has held you back at all? Is there like a straight path in tech where you graduate from college with computer science and you get an internship and then you move on up? Or do a lot of people have a story like you?
I think it helped me to see the gap and the cultural issues that were going on more clearly because I learned so much about how language really can be used in very powerful ways. And just picking up on little ways that people were excluded really got to me and really bothered me. I've always been the type of person who wanted to advocate for others and bring people together. And I think that's why I went into sign language interpreting, or that I went into starting Hack the Gap, or any of the other things I've done that helps to bring women together. I also was on the founding board member of Minneapolis Mad Women, which is also talking about the gender disparities in advertising.
Carolyn, is in Maple Grove, and she called. Hi, you had a comment or a question?
I did. First, thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I was listening to the prior caller who talked a little bit about the difference between the competitiveness and getting her voice heard with men versus the collaboration with women. And it, you know, it brought to mind for me and my experience, and I've got over 30 years in technology, I think in general, in my experience, I'll only speak for, that men and women do approach working differently. And as a change leader, I will sometimes deliberately engage women earlier in the process because I think that we work differently. And if we don't collaborate with others when we're driving change, women will be less likely to engage the change later, where in my personal experience, I've found that if men weren't along for the ride, they are less resistant. If they think it's a good idea, they will jump on. And so I guess my point there is that there is just perhaps a difference in how men and women do approach work. And so it's understanding the balance of the two, not necessarily that one is better or worse, but in order for women to have their voice heard, it's to understand when to engage each other or how to fit in.
Jennifer, what do you think of that?
I 100% agree. I think the thing that comes to mind, just thinking about, the scenario that you just outlined where you're getting other women involved sooner, is just that the consequences are a little bit different, right? So for men, because for most of the companies, the people in the places of power and the executive roles tend to be men. So those men who are able to get their voices heard can most likely move up the ranks, right? Whereas the woman who might have to struggle to get her voice heard will also have to struggle to move up the ranks. So I think there are definitely different styles, and I think that is just one of those things where it's just a difference between men and women. But the consequences of those different styles, I think, as it relates to our bottom line, are still, concerning.
Paige in Park Rapids has called in with an experience. Hi, Paige.
Hi,
how are things in Park Rapids today?
We're cooling off, waiting for a little storm to come in to wash the dirt off.
All right. What's your story?
Well, I went to high school in the 70s and was told by math teacher, science teacher, and a guidance counselor, girls don't need those classes. Why are you fighting so hard for them? And instead of the testing that's failing all of us now, why not do aptitude testing? I had a real aptitude for it, fought tooth and nail to take some computer classes. Learning intelligence is a huge aspect. And in the aspect of language, I'm not a guy. Stop calling me one of the guys.
Thanks for calling, Paige. Women in the 80s were, in fact, there was a larger percent of women in the 80s who were programmers, despite Paige being told maybe she should try something else. And while no teacher would probably tell a woman that girls shouldn't be in math anymore, how come it's still not catching on, or how come there's not as many young girls and young women interested in programming right now? Kristen, what do you think?
I think one of the reasons we keep going back to the pipeline is because the problem has a lot to do with really smaller, finer point microaggressions. So a lot of times you're in a situation and you can just feel that things aren't really, you don't belong there. You don't feel that you belong. And with Hack the Gap, what we found is when women come together in a room and they sit around and start to share experiences, they have told me in very heartfelt testimonies that, wow, I am not alone. This is happening to other people. So little microaggressions.
Like what? What's a microaggression?
Well, the first one that comes to mind for me personally is when I came out of a meeting full of all men and my boss pulled me aside and said, "Is something wrong?" And I said, "No." And he said, well, you weren't smiling throughout the whole meeting. And I just thought back to that meeting, and I thought not one single person in that meeting was smiling. It was a tense conversation. It was, and I felt like I had the wind knocked out of me. So little microaggressions can also include when you bring something up and they say, oh, I'm sorry you feel that way. And you might not notice that little subtlety on the words, but I'm sorry you feel that way puts it right back on you instead of taking responsibility for what's going on in the situation.
And your boss, in this case, it's a microaggression, you say, but also he said something, and imagine how many times they're just thinking that and thinking, and you don't know that they're thinking inside, well, she's not smiling, there's a problem.
Mm-hmm.
Jennifer, did that sound, you were saying mm-hmm, so I know it sounds familiar to you, but can you give me an example, especially as both a woman, that intersectionality of being a woman and a woman of color?
Totally. I think I've had at least three examples that are almost verbatim of Kristen's example, where, yes, where someone has pulled me aside to let me know either that I'm not smiling enough. I've also had other women of color who are in positions, you know, that are either higher than mine or different than mine, kind of assume that role of let me help, you know, this up and coming generation, if you will, and kind of reinforce some of these, what I kind of see as dysfunctional social patterns.
So teach people absolutely. To smile in a meeting.
Yeah. And kind of say like, hey, you know, I'm kind of helping you out here. I've noticed that you need to, that you're not, you know, you don't appear to be happy to be here. You're not kind of emoting, you know, positivity at all times. And therefore, let me help you out and show you the ropes and show you how to come across as pleasant and all of those other, you know, flowery things that we like to say or that we expect women to exude in the workplace. Where meanwhile, I've also worked with coworkers who have literally thrown objects. So it's kind of like, it's hard to reconcile my lack of smiling with someone who's actually throwing a temper tantrum. It's kind of like, why is he not getting this talk, but I am?
Yeah. We are talking about women in the technology industry and why there's so few women in the technology industry and what also it means for us if there aren't women in it. What happens to the products that we use if there's not a woman involved in the design? I would love to hear about your experience in the tech industry if you're a woman. 651-227-6000 or 1-800-242-2828. I've got two guests. Jennifer Epperson is a user experience designer and the editor of Blacks in Technology. And Kristen Womack is the founder of Hack the Gap. Why don't we go right to the phones, and because Heidi in Minneapolis has been waiting. Hi, Heidi. What did you want to share?
Hello. I was just going to make an interesting point about young women in STEM school. We chose STEM school as an alternative to Montessori. We were not able to get into that type of school, and we have been very satisfied and elated that she has had this opportunity to broaden her brain power and get out of her desk and work with small groups. And it seems that there, because the school is doing what they do, the girls are allowed to be just as much a part, if not more, and find their own path. So I just thought if people are out there looking for alternatives for their children, you know, please choose that because it's a force to be reckoned with.
That's great. Thank you for the recommendation, Heidi. Jennifer, so when you look around at your peers or look at people in mid-career and look at people above you in the corporate structure, why aren't there more women? Why do women leave? Is it family burdens? Is it just the lack of interest in the industry after a while? What happens?
That's a question that I've been trying to wrap my mind around a lot lately. I can't speak obviously for all women, but I think at least anecdotally, definitely starting a family and maintaining a career in tech is a challenge. I think that challenge is getting somewhat better because a lot of, especially in the startup space, a lot of companies are starting to think a lot more critically about things like maternity leave. And one of the startups that I worked with had a breast pumping room, like a private room, mm-hmm. You know, in our office so that the mothers who are breastfeeding can do that uninterrupted. So I think there are definitely signs of improvement for kind of accommodating those things. But I think, at least from my personal experience, things like sexual harassment, which is especially, you know, kind of top of mind with the Me Too movement, I think that that also plays a critical role in women's ability to stay within their roles and, you know, kind of on their career path, as well as their ability to kind of bounce back after some sort of incident or something that they've had to deal with. So I think there are lots of challenges that are kind of societal that make it a little bit difficult for women to stay on the career path in the same way that their male counterparts might.
Janine called. She is in St. Paul. Janine, hi. Thanks for calling.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
What did you want to ask?
So, yeah, my question is, I have been in technology for about 30 years and have experienced all sorts of really great things and all sorts of not so great things. But I have really been trying for about the last 15 years of my career to find young women to help mentor them in this space. And I'm going to say I've had very minimal success with that because I do think it's very important to have more women in technology. And I think it's important for our female in the field right now to do that type of work. But like I said, I'm not really having a lot of success. And I'm wondering what kind of advice people could give to me and other women like myself.
Kristen, what do you think?
Well, I would say maybe look to mentor a young boy. Your story kind of reminded me, and your question reminded me of when I was in a bookstore last year around the holidays, and there was the stack of Rebel Girls books, and they have one and they have two, and it's just highlights women in history and how they changed the world. And I was picking one up, and this couple was next to me, and they were talking about getting one. And they said, "Oh, is that for your daughter?" I said, "No, it's for my son." And the look on their face was incredible to me. And they said, "Oh, yeah, we could buy this for our grandson, too." So I think that sometimes just focusing on youth as a generality, as opposed to just looking for women or young girls. When I see the shirts that say girls can do anything, I also want to see those for boys. I want both boys and girls to feel that they can do everything. And saying that girls can is almost giving something to young girls, saying that they're not doing something right off the bat. They're too little to understand some of the dynamics that go into this. And but I think that your heart's in the right place to look out for people that you can mentor. And I think that there's a lot of opportunities in the Twin Cities. And I would love to connect with you if you want some of those ideas. I'd be more than happy to even connect you with Hack the Gap.
Cool. Jennifer, what advice would you have for someone in the workplace, a woman who wants to mentor another woman and not just tell her to smile in meetings and act perky?
Yeah, it might be because of the intersectionality component, but I have found a lot of success and a lot of really meaningful experiences through mentorship. My main bit of advice is to just rely on an organic connection. It's an awkward conversation starter to approach someone and say, "Hey, it's time for us to build this mentorship," which has happened to me. I think that my best mentoring experiences, whether I'm on the mentor side or the mentee side, have been those that come out of organic interactions. And I think it's really about just kind of establishing that connection and then, yes, incorporating some, for lack of a better way of saying it, adding some rails to it or some discipline to it, setting up a weekly one-on-one to just kind of talk about where things are with your career, what are the challenges that you're going through, what are the things that are working well, and it doesn't have to be in a boardroom. It can be over coffee, that sort of thing. I think a little bit of structure goes a long way. And just kind of relying on that organic connection is really helpful as well.
Mm-hmm. I want to go to Mitch in Minneapolis. He's been waiting very patiently. Mitch, hello.
Hey, can you hear me?
Yeah.
All right, cool. Thanks for having me on air. I really appreciate it. Let me just give you a little bit of background about myself. I built my first computer when I was 9, wrote my first program when I was 12, went to undergrad, got bachelor's degrees in both pure mathematics and computer science. Got a master's degree in software engineering, run my own software consulting company, So to say that this is my career path is a little bit of an understatement, I might say. yeah, so I've been well-versed in the tech space for a little while. And the one thing that I would like to point out, and I think a couple of other previous callers have kind of hinted towards this, is that, you know, a lot of times when these conversations are had, a lot of it has to do with, you know, hiring managers and, you know, technical leadership and, you know, like somebody was talking about microaggressions within a meeting that, you know, may not necessarily be understood from a male's perspective about what a female is going through. But I would challenge and I would say that I think that the true root of the problem might be a little bit more upstream. You know, we always hear about this discrepancy in number of women that are employed in tech. We don't ever hear about a number of the discrepancy in, say, the number of women that enroll in computer science classes at university. Or the people that are involved in, you know, robotics club after school. So I really think that we are, you know, looking in the right, looking for the right source, but I think we might be looking in the wrong place when we have these discussions to completely omit somebody's childhood and their interest that they had when they were a young person and what they involved themselves with and what they chose to study in college. I think does almost a disservice to the entire argument, because I think it's a really, really important thing that's often overshadowed.
Thanks so much for calling, Mitch. And I was when I was doing research for this hour, and I was reading a profile of one woman who said that all her friends when she was growing up in the 80s that got computers, they were seeing that as toys at that point. And it was a boy toy, and the boys had them, and the boys got to sit and play with the computers, and the girls didn't have them as much. And there is that where you feed it to someone and they've got to have an organic interest in it. And it's true. He's right. Isn't it true, Kristen?
Mm-hmm.
And how do you feed that naturally outside of school, like outside of a class?
That's interesting.
And especially at a time when there's so much competing for
exactly
attention. I mean, I grew up in the 80s and there was a lot competing at that point. And so I can't imagine what it's like to raise girls and boys, to Kristen's point, in a day like today.
Yeah, it's really tough.
Yeah, I think one thing that's really important is representation. So a lot of times when you're confronted with something new and you don't see anyone else that's playing with that. So if the gaming and the computers seem to be more with your brothers or your male cousins, that doesn't seem like something that's a good fit. And so representation matters across the entire age, from when you're very young, whether you're a boy or a girl, till adulthood. And so to your last caller, or the previous caller who asked about mentoring, I think a great way to mentor and a great way to set a good example is also to share your life story in ways that might be through a talk or on Twitter or on Facebook, and just kind of share little vignettes of what it's like to be a woman in tech of 30 years. And then that representation is there. And so I think representation is a big part of this as much as it is the pipeline at any point, whether it's the leaky pipeline or the early pipeline.
I've shared the story before on the air, but my daughter was making Kinects with her best friend, who's a boy, and they're both building something with Kinects in the classroom. They spent 50 minutes on it. It was free time. And then the kids in their classroom, who are their friends and half boys and half girls, came over and looked at the boy and said, "Hey, good job building those." And they thought he had built both of them, even though my daughter had been there building it the whole time. They didn't even see her.
Oh,
so it's hard. Like, you aren't even seen if you're building these things. But let's move on, because I know that Kristen want to talk about this. And Jennifer, this is something that you are really tied into. What happens when women aren't involved in the design? Things that aren't involved in the design of algorithms or apps or computer programs. So I'm asking you about the absence of something. Like, what would have been different with Google if women had been involved with the setup of it at the very beginning? What, you know, things like that. Jennifer, I'm going to start with you. It's a huge question.
Yeah.
I'm throwing it at you and go for it.
It's a great question. And I will answer it from my own experience and more so from a race perspective, because I think for me that has been most impactful in my career. So I worked at a startup that its goal was to change the way that we age in America. And it's primary users are caregivers. most caregivers in home health aides are Black and brown as of now in this country. Had I not been part of the design team, we would have failed to create an app, create an experience that was representative for caregivers. So we have illustrations in the app. Those illustrations are brown and Black skin tones. The way that we conducted user research to create the set of requirements for that app were done in a way that was different because I was leading that user research and I was able to make that direct connection with our users. So I think that it's one of the, you know, millions of examples of having a slightly different outcome when you have different people, different looking people, people with different genders at the design table, for sure.
Kristen?
Mm-hmm. I would follow on that with an example that I've seen a video on the internet, and maybe some of your listeners have seen this also, but it's a soap dispenser. And it's showing a person of color putting their hand under the soap dispenser and nothing's happening. And then the next person is trying to do this, also a person of color. And then they kind of think about it for a second and they take a piece of paper that's white and they put the paper under and the soap dispenses immediately. And this is in a public bathroom.
I have not seen that. That's astonishing.
And if I may give a second example.
Yes, you may.
When you think about Facebook, which is my favorite example of this, recently when Mark Zuckerberg was giving his congressional hearing, he shortly after that, they came out with an article about how they reorganized the product teams. And they had the org chart of the 14 leaders of Facebook in the product department. And they were all, there's 14 of them. They were all men except for one woman. They were all white from what I could tell in the pictures. And they were all about the same age. I didn't see anyone that appeared to be above 45. They all live within San Francisco. So there's this bubble of a very homogenous group controlling. Facebook has 1 in 5 pages of all internet views. So page views are like when a person looks at a page on the internet. 1 in 5 of every page view is controlled is Facebook. And they have billions of people. So you have this small homogenous group that is controlling a product that is worldwide and billions of people. And that can be really dangerous. And we're seeing that come out with the way harassment is handled on Facebook and other things in that nature.
Let's go to the call. Let's go to the phones. Brittany is in Rochester. Hi, Brittany.
Hi. First of all, thanks for having this conversation.
You're welcome.
I just wanted to share a little bit of perspective of my own that kind of backs up the things that the other callers have been sharing. As a sixth grader, I was chosen to participate in a special tech emphasized program. And when I started the program, I was the only girl, and I ended up quitting before the program was completed because I didn't feel like I was given attention or that even the class was made for me. And then later on in undergraduate, so I have a design technology degree. I was working at the help desk, and the three other students that were female that I was working with, we had to go through about a 6-month process of documenting and reporting the chief technology officer for harassment. Mm-hmm. And so just that's a lot of issues with access to the industry. And I don't work in the industry now. I have since become an entrepreneur. But the modeling and the access needs to change. And I'm really encouraged by hearing the women that have called in that say they want to mentor. And I encourage them to focus on the boys. If they can find boys that want to be allies for women in this industry, absolutely take that and run with it. Because that's important.
Thank you so much for calling in with your experience, Brittany, we really appreciate it. Jennifer, what do you see out there that you find really exciting? What's working really well?
In the context of tech and
tech and women and representation. You know, there have been panels that have been started, like South by Southwest tried to do a panel just 3 years ago, and they had to move it because the women were being harassed, and so then men didn't come to the panel. But now hundreds of million dollars are being spent by these tech companies. That's a great step forward, but money doesn't necessarily mean that something's changing. What do you see out there that's really moving the dial?
I think just having conversations like the one that we're having today, just bringing voice and perspective and, you know, first person account to what experiences are like for women of color in tech. I think simply talking about things and having a difference of perspective and debating those sorts of things are very healthy and really good catalysts for change. And I've seen how that has kind of trickled down even to the ground level, if you will, where we're starting to have these conversations even at startups and internally at these large companies about what does it mean for us to create diverse products? What does it mean for us to really get to know our end users so that we're creating experiences that aren't just mapping to our experiences as tech professionals, as, you know, white people, black people, men, women, but that are representative of the users that we, you know, really care about and that are really the backbone of our company. So, yes, I think just discussing it is very refreshing.
Jennifer, thank you so much for joining us.
Of course. Thank you for having me.
Jennifer Epperson is a user experience designer, and she's the editor of Blacks in Technology. She joined us from New York. Kristen, what are you excited about? And you can say Hack the Gap, and you can say some stuff that happens there, and that's okay. Because really, I want to know, in fact, I'm just going to ask that. What happens at Hack the Gap? What do you get done, and how does it work? You've got a couple minutes to
tell me. Hack the Gap is an all-female space, so women come together. We don't allow press or anything during the building cycle. We don't allow outside people to come in unless they're mentors. And so women have this safe sort of lockdown space where they can create all day, go home, get some sleep, and then come in the next day and demo what they built. And so on Saturday morning when they get there, they have not thought about this project that they're going to build unless they were there to pitch the idea. And so on Saturday morning, they gather, women pitch the idea, and teams form around whatever idea they want to solve, whatever problem they want to solve, and how they're going to do that with technology. And so putting that many women, it's usually about 10 teams on stage on Sunday in front of the community, which now we're about up to 200 plus people that attend the demos. Just seeing those women on stage demonstrating that it is not a pipeline problem in the Twin Cities. We sell out every year, usually over 100 people. We've kind of flexed with what our attendance is because we like to keep the event very intimate and give everyone a chance to be on stage. So we sell out every single year, and we have a waiting list, usually about 20 to 30 people. So that's I love that that's happening. And employers who advertise through us by sponsoring us with their money to put on the event, they have reported back to me changes in their hiring. And someone recently told me that they hired 50% of the candidates that came in and interviewed from Hack the Gap, and they saw a 5% lift in the applicants that were female. So that was great.
What was your favorite thing that someone created at Hack the Gap? Just to give people an idea of what it is, because there are people out there who are wondering, okay, they do something, what do they do? And then they present it.
Right. Well, actually, I go back to, it's usually the most inspiring projects that have kind of come out have been hardware projects. So the first year, a teacher wanted to figure out how to help children understand breathing and becoming more calm. And so they took a Star Wars toy headset and they hacked into it and soldered a bunch of stuff and rewired it and got it to have a sensor right behind your ear and right on your forehead, and it would read your biorhythms. And then they piped that data into a JavaScript library that visualized the data. It's called D3, and they basically were able to show when you breathe in deep and you close your eyes and you start to calm down that visually this is what happens with your body.
I want that. I want that so badly. All right. Kristen Womack is the co-founder of Hack the Gap. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
This was a recording of a live radio show on NPR News. To add your voice to our discussion, you can call in at 800-242-2828 or tweet Kerri at KERRINPR. And if you miss us live, you'll find all of our shows by subscribing to this podcast. If you have questions, you can email us at talk@npr.org.